Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Happy Tuesday to all of you. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today, just before midnight, there was a vote in the Washington State House on a bill we've been following very, very closely that has to do with police pursuits and returning power to law enforcement to be able to, pursue extremely violent criminals who are victimizing innocent people. I have some mixed feelings on how that vote went down and the path forward that we'll discuss. Also, this clip has been floating around the internet. I know some of you might not be Jon Stewart fans, but I gotta say, Jon Stewart gave an absolute masterclass in how an elected official or a government official should be held accountable, how they should be interviewed. So I want to play that for you today. And later on, Chicago is giving Seattle an example of precisely what not to do during elections this year. So we will look to Chicago yet again for an example of what we do not want to be and what we do not want our politicians to do. Before we dive into all of that, hello, Nicole. Greetings to you. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good today.
I know the sun's out a little bit. I guess it's breaking through in some places, but yeah, feels good.
It's that deep Seattle spring sadness.
I know. I just want it to be spring so bad, like real spring. I wanted to clear off my patio. I wanted to set up all of my patio furniture and things. It'll be here soon.
And my dogs just sit there. So Lockie loves, she'll play fetch until she dies.
Yes.
But she doesn't like to go out in the rain. She loves to swim. She doesn't like to be rained on, which is kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So she'll just sit on the couch like this.
Aww.
And she'll sometimes have her ball and she'll be like, And I'm like, what do you want me to do? You don't want to be rained on. So she's just sulking. Anyway, okay. Good to see you. Good to be good here. To remember, for those of you who are following along on the live stream, that you can post comments on YouTube, Patreon, Locals, Facebook, and we'll get to see your comments coming up at the end of the show. I want to start with what went down on the floor of the Washington State House yesterday. I started getting bombarded with text messages around, I think it was like 11 p.m., about the fact that the pursuit bill was coming up on the floor for a vote. And I had been told earlier on in the day it might happen, but nobody wanted to 100% go on the record that it was going to go down, or maybe they didn't want to jinx it or something. And you guys know that I have been, this has been kind of my passion bill, passion issue this legislative session, because I think it speaks to the heart of who we want to be as a society and what are our values as a society, and do we want there to be respect for the rule of law? And do I think that the police pursuit bill is the end-all, be-all single piece of legislation? No, I don't think it's a singular issue like that, but I think it represents something much larger. And that's this complete degradation of respect for the rule of law and law and order that's seeping into every community across the state. So just to kind of catch you guys up, for those of you who maybe haven't been following the issue as closely, at the beginning of the session, there were bipartisan proposals in the House and Senate to fix the absolute failure of a police pursuit policy passed by Democrats in 2021. That was coming off the whole George Floyd summer of 2020 into the next legislative session. And basically their argument was police pursuits are dangerous, innocent people are being killed. And so they limited and restricted almost entirely the ability of police officers to pursue even dangerous criminals. And we've seen now a year and a half of the impacts of that, and they haven't been good. State Patrol, they're dealing with something like over 3,000 people who are just driving off from troopers last year, which is insane, and it's way more than had previously. So again, if you're a criminal, and I've said this about like the drug epidemic that we're dealing with, if I'm Mexican drug cartel, why would I not peddle my narcotics through Washington State? Why would I not traffic my narcotics through Washington State? Because you can just drive off. And they, under the law right now, are not going to pursue your drug mules. And so absolutely, if I was the cartel, 100% I'd be having a field day in Washington State delivering this fentanyl all over the state, killing people, because the state of Washington, more specifically, the majority party, simply does not care. So this, there were the bipartisan proposals that I think really would have been meaningful and would have fixed the law in a way that would give police the authority to pursue people who they know have committed a serious crime. And then throughout the session, obviously the political will of some Democrats started to wane, and they agreed to watered down version after watered down version after watered down version. And that is what came to the floor of the House for a vote last night. Again, super late at night when most Washingtonians aren't even awake to watch the debate. But that's why you have Undivided, because we replay key elements of that debate for you. So I want to play a few clips for you, and I'm going to get to one at the end from a Democrat that I think was the most important testimony of the whole evening. I'll start with Representative Roger Goodman. He is the chair of the House Public Safety, Justice, and Reentry Committee. And, you know, thankfully, he is someone who at least gave this bill a hearing. I think had he not, we wouldn't even have a watered-down version. But he arose on the floor during the introduction of this bill to take a vote on it and to have debate. And he explained, generally speaking, the ins and outs of what this version of the pursuit fix would do.
I rise to present to the body Senate Bill 5352 related to police vehicle pursuits. The bill amends a current law to provide that a vehicle pursuit may begin if there is reasonable suspicion rather than just probable cause that a violent offense, sex offense, DUI, domestic violence, vehicular pursuit, assault, I'm sorry, and the escape offense. So if it's only reasonable suspicion, the pursuit may begin. The bill also provides that the individual must pose a serious risk of harm to others. This is a slight adjustment from the immediate harm to others. And it is important that the pursuit be only for the purpose of identifying or apprehending the suspect. In addition, probably the most important part of the law is what we call the balancing test, that the pursuit itself may not be more dangerous than the risk of not apprehending the individual. The pursuit needs to be called off under those circumstances.
So you'll notice, and this is going to be a point of contention that you're going to hear from Republicans who got up to offer their thoughts before taking a vote. You'll notice that stolen vehicles isn't included. And that has been the big issue here, is that a lot of these people that we're seeing drive off from law enforcement are in a stolen vehicle. And the Democrats who don't support improving the law have said, oh, it's a property crime. That's just a property crime. No one's life is worth, you know, no, we don't want to lose lives over a property crime, which is completely disingenuous, because what do you think they're using that stolen vehicle to do? What do you think they're using it to do? They're not just taking it out on a joyride. They are using that stolen vehicle in furtherance of another crime. Is it a drive-by shooting? Some sort of gang activity? Is it one of those people who are ramming stolen vehicles into a convenience store, strapping the ATM to the back of their car and driving off? Or is it like what happened in rural Pierce County in January of 2022, where a known felon, wanted felon, driving a stolen landscaping truck hit two 12-year-old girls who were walking home hand in hand from a sleepover, killed one of them instantly, Immaculee Golday, and then left the other 12-year-old, her friend Kathleen, dying in a ditch next to the body of her dead friend. So please, Democrats, tell me how stolen vehicles are just a property crime, and that's really the extent of it. And this is the argument that Representative Kelly Chambers, a Republican who represents an area of Pierce County, made last night. Now, you'll notice before I play this from Representative Chambers, there are some Republicans who voted against this watered-down version, and we knew this was going to happen because Republicans were faced with this decision. Okay, do we support a bill that we know is not going to have a substantial impact on what's happening on our streets just because it's something? Or do we make a statement and say, no, we're not going to support this watered-down version to give Democrats some sort of false win that they can then tout on the campaign trail? And that seems to be the position that Representative Kelly Chambers took. And Immaculee Golday was killed in her, I think it was in her district. So I want to play for you Representative Chambers, a part of her remarks.
I rise tonight to urge a no on this vote. You know, vehicle pursuit has been one of the most talked about issues this session. Really, for the last 2 years since this body passed a no pursuit policy. And this is the best we can come up with? This doesn't do enough, not even close. This doesn't come close to protecting kids across the state, and families are expecting us to protect them. This doesn't protect the kids in my district. Just ask 12-year-old Hudson. and his 14-year-old brother, Nash. They went up to Snoqualmie to go skiing, only to later that day see their dad's vehicle all over the news, every station. Their dad's business had been burglarized again, the second time in a month. His vehicle stolen and used to run over two 12-year-old girls. Just ask them. Ask 12-year-old Amber Goldade and her best friend, Kathleen Olson. I'm sorry, but you can't, because Amber Goldade is dead, because police could not pursue the stolen vehicle used to run these two 12-year-old girls over. They were doing nothing. Madam Speaker, what is more innocent than two 12-year-old girls having a sleepover, going up to the school to play, and walking back home? They're the victims of this no-pursuit policy. And this, what's being proposed tonight, doesn't even come close to making our state safer.
Yeah. And look, I have a lot of respect for Representative Chambers. You know, we've done a lot of stories with her, and I don't blame her for voting no. And I want to make that clear. I don't blame any Republican for voting no on the basis that this version of the pursuit law does not do enough, does not go far enough. And they don't want to give Democrats some sort of really false win to be able to take out on the campaign trail and say, see, we prioritize public safety. I get it. At the same time, I encouraged before this vote Republicans to vote yes, because I felt like if you take politics, political implications, electoral implications out of it, and you just think, okay, if this watered down fix can save one life, then is it worth it? And to me, the answer has to be yes. No matter how Democrats might spin it, to me, the answer has to be yes. But I don't blame Republicans. So I want to play for you. So you don't have to go back through hours of testimony that happened in the middle of the night. I want to play for you the worst testimony from a lawmaker about this bill, and then we'll get to the vote on it. And I want to play for you what I thought was the most consequential testimony from a lawmaker on the pursuit bill. So for the worst, we'll start with Representative Daria Farivar, a Democrat, who I've heard her talking about this bill before, and every time I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. So she dives into data and what they do and do not know about the state of police pursuits in Washington.
This law has only been in effect for less than a year and a half. That's not enough time. Passing this legislation means we're making a very serious decision without the necessary information. We don't know how this will work. We're still missing so much data. There's still so much we don't know. And at the same time, we do know something, which is that 1051 reduced fatalities.
Lord help me with this woman. Where do I even start? Can we, Nicole, can you re-rack that? Because I might want to play it again. Is that possible? Let's play it again, because I really want you to, and I'll talk under her, but there's so much to dissect there. Can we just hit that again?
This law has only been in effect for less than a year and a half. That's not enough time. Passing this legislation means we're making a very serious decision without the necessary information.
Okay, you can cut it there.
We're
making a very serious decision without the necessary information. Man, when would have been a good time to have the necessary information on police pursuits and the pros and cons? Could it have been in 2021 before you changed the law to begin with? I keep hearing this theme from Democrats. You know, we still need a lot of data and a lot of information about, you know, whether this law is really a good idea or a bad idea. You should have done it. And you should have done your due diligence before you shoved through a law that has had dire public safety consequences. You know, in this session, they're like, well, how about we put together a 19-person commission to study the issue. You should have studied the issue in 2021 if you cared so much about facts and data and public safety. And for her to say at the end, for the love of God, this woman, for her to say at the end, can you, Nicole, look at what her legislative district is? I want to say it includes part of Seattle. I could be wrong on that. Check into that. Daria Farivar. For her to say at the end, it has saved lives. Again, a false piece of data that has no bearing in reality. what they're looking at, the number of people, and I will never tell you that police pursuits are safe. I've never said that. I will never say that. And in fact, no one who wants the law fixed I've ever heard say police pursuits are safe. Let's let police pursue whoever they want. It's just that's total red flag, false flag. For her to say it saved lives, there is a little study that is in dispute about its relevance to this whole issue that right now says 9 people in the year and a half before the law went into effect were killed as a result of police pursuits. And some of those were the suspect or an accomplice of the suspect who was in the vehicle. And then in the year and a half since, there's been 3 fatalities. And so they want to use, and again, any loss of life is a tragedy. It's an absolute tragedy. But they want to use numbers that are that small and in dispute, I might add, to act as if there's a 70% decrease in the loss of life. And you're talking about the difference between 9 and 3, when actually more innocent bystanders were killed in the year and a half after than of the 9 in the year and a half before. But they don't want to get into that because that doesn't really fit their data. And I'm not saying that's statistically significant. I don't think any of that information is statistically significant. And what that argument totally leaves out are the consequences of allowing someone to flee and go on to commit the criminal activity that they were going to commit. What that data leaves out is when someone steals a vehicle like the landscaping truck in Pierce County, they're not able to pursue them. They go on, they hit 2 12-year-old girls, they kill one of them. You are leaving out an entire body of criminal behavior that, frankly, I don't know how we get data around. If I'm a criminal and I flee from law enforcement and they're not able to apprehend, they're not able to arrest me, then there's no data to account for what I go on to do. How are they supposed to know what I go on to do if I'm never caught for it? So did you find out what district she's from?
Yeah, she's District 46, which is Lake City, Northgate, North Seattle.
Shock
area.
Of the century. Mm-hmm. Shame on her. Honestly, shame on her for pushing incomplete, false, inconsistent data. That was the worst of all the lawmakers' testimony that I heard yesterday. The absolute most hypocritical. Now, the one that I thought was the most consequential, I was a little surprised by. Okay, it's a Democrat. Democratic State Rep David Hackney. Here's why I think it's the most consequential. He represents South King County, the area that is inarguably having the most issues with crime, gang violence, violence perpetrated with firearms, a lot of issues with stolen vehicles. David Hackney is a Black man. David Hackney is someone who in the past has proposed some laws that I found absolutely egregious. For instance, in the last legislative session, his name was on a bill that would have reduced the penalty for drive-by shooters who kill someone. So I have had my fair share of criticisms for Representative David Hackney. But he stood up on the floor of the House last night and made it clear that police are an important part of the solution. And police pursuits are an important part of dealing with the level of crime and violence playing out on the streets of the district he represents. Here he is.
I'm stepping forward to say that reducing the jurisdiction and discretion of the police does not make my community safer. I represent South King County, the 11th legislative district, Tukwila, Renton, and Kent. I will tell you that in my district, we need police more and more as we are suffering from some of the highest property and violent crime rates in King County. Madam Speaker, I may be the only person in this august body who has drafted affidavits for federal judges to get permission to make arrests or to search people based on probable cause. I can tell you that standard is too high. The proper standard is reasonable suspicion. That's the appropriate standard in this bill. Madam Speaker, we ask police to make difficult decisions every day. And in order to keep our communities safe, we need to give police the opportunity to make decisions to pursue criminal activity based on reasonable suspicion, to make sure that they have an opportunity to address the rising crime rates that we see every day. I ask you for your support on this important bill.
Well, I'll be damned. I will be damned. I gotta give him a little. Nicole, will you just love it, love it, love every second of it. Representative Hackney, if you're watching, I take back everything I said about you last legislative session when it came to the bills that you put your name on. A couple things. He's exactly right. And, you know, thank God someone like him is willing up to stand up and say it. Now, I wish he had been that vocal and that forceful earlier on in the legislative session. I will say that because I think his voice on this issue would have made a difference. In fact, I had reached out to Representative Hackney to get him on the show to talk about this issue, and we did not hear back. And I wish he had really lent his voice. I know he was behind the scenes because I've heard that, but I don't think that he was forceful enough in calling out what some of his Democratic colleagues were doing. So I'm glad he said it last night. I wish he had said it sooner, but I hope that that sentiment from Democrats like David Hackney, whose communities are bearing the brunt of the public safety crisis, I hope that sentiment will carry forth to next year's legislative session so they can make this bill better. Now, all of that being said, the pursuit fix, the watered down pursuit fix, did pass in the House overnight. I think that's a good thing. I think if it saves one life, it's a good thing. It is far from enough. It is not going to put a dent in the severe disregard for the rule of law that we're seeing on our streets, the epidemic of stolen vehicles. It's not going to put a dent in that, unfortunately. But we have to decide what to do moving forward. And I don't think letting up is the answer. I never do, of course. But my fear is that Democrats will take this as a win, that they can go out on the campaign trail to their constituents and they can say, oh, we heard you on public safety. We passed a bill to fix the police pursuit law we passed in 2021. We acknowledged our mistakes. And I'm fearful that Democrats will never revisit this issue, that they will say, that's good enough. That's good enough for voters. We can gaslight voters into believing that that did something. Or worse yet, when this crime crisis continues and it's still continuing in a year, they'll say, well, I guess fixing police pursuits wasn't the solution because we still are in the middle of a crime crisis. So we have to be hyper aware of the gaslighting that is going to ensue. No question. And we have to demand that they make the bill better. And I don't know if there can be some sort of initiative of the people to restore some of this power to police when it comes to stolen vehicles, but we can't call this good enough. I'm glad something got done, but it is certainly not good enough. So I wanted to just update you guys on what happened with police pursuits. I know a lot of you spent time this legislative session calling, emailing, even showing up for testimony, talking to your elected leaders, and I appreciate the action and the enthusiasm that you gave to this issue. One more story here at the top. This is wild, but it's not surprising. Look, there is this, how do I even put this in a nice way? Maybe I don't put it in a nice way. I think the people of Seattle have good intentions. I think that they're a caring populace. I think that they believe they care about their fellow humans. And that is what has led to some of their voting patterns. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that I do think, in most cases, their heart is in the right place. Nicole's looking at me like, where are you going with this?
You're giving them a lot of credit. I mean,
well, I don't want to lump the all majority, Seattleites into the same.
I think the majority of citizens agree. I'm not sure about all the politicians.
I think, for instance, a lot of progressive voters vote with their heart. And a lot of conservative voters kind of vote with their head.
Okay.
And I don't think either one is particularly bad, but I think a good mix of both is usually the ticket. Right.
Yeah. I also think there's some underlying agendas that disruption in society benefits. And so they're just OK with it.
I think that's a small portion who are that like thinking that hard about like, let's disrupt
that's
this.
That's who's getting
XYZ.
Elected in Seattle.
Oh, I know. I'm talking about portion. Voters. Anyway.
OK. Yes.
OK. We'll dive into that more. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason I want to talk about this. There was a family that was in South Lake Union. Having, I believe it was just kind of a picnic, mm-hmm. a family picnic. And one of them was a 69-year-old man who was there with his family. And this was, I think we have a picture, for those watching on the stream, of where this was. You know where the Center for Wooden Boats is? So it's like by Mohai, by the Museum of History and Industry. And so this is, you know, right off of Amazon's campus. And so I wouldn't call this a particularly dangerous neighborhood of Seattle. I mean,
not at all.
My mom was in town and I let her walk around and go to Mohai and stuff by herself down there. I wouldn't do it downtown. So certainly not one of the more dangerous areas of the city. And so this family was there celebrating a birthday. And they decided to give food. This is according to Como News, who wrote an article on this. They decided to give food to two guys they thought were homeless. And that is when one of the men who they gave food to started attacking, viciously beating the 69-year-old man who was there with his family for a picnic. One of the women, his family member who witnessed it, he got my brother down. He was kicking him in the ribs. So my son got on top of him, was pulling him off. I heard screaming. And I saw a knife in someone's face. And so not only did he viciously beat him, but this homeless man who they gave food to started to stab him. And thank God he's alive. He was taken to Harborview. And this is where I go back to, I think it is a good thing to have empathy for those who are living on the streets, for those who are drug addicted, for those who are in the throes of a mental health crisis. I think it is a great thing to have empathy for your fellow human beings. But that doesn't mean that people in those circumstances can't be dangerous and haven't shown in the past in Seattle propensity for violence towards innocent people. And empathy does not mean allowing these people to continue behaviors that are leading eventually to their slow decline and death. And it does not mean that if someone's mentally ill and violent, that that person doesn't have to be held accountable for their actions. And this is really the breakdown of what's happening in Seattle. To me, true empathy for what's going on the streets is wanting a carrot and a stick to make sure that someone who's in the throes of some sort of crisis, homeless, drug addicted, mentally ill, that there is a motivation for them to get help, and that motivation is the law. And so while, you know, I think about this family and I'm like, gosh, these are just these nice, nice people who were at a picnic at a park for a birthday, and they're like, man, there's two homeless guys, we want to help. I feel awful for them. It is also just evidence, though, that a lot of the people who are out there living on the streets, they're not just there by virtue of not having enough money to live somewhere. And that's this false narrative. You know, you'll always hear in Seattle, whenever you bring up the nexus between homelessness and crime, you'll have people fire back like, oh, not all homeless people are criminals. No one is saying that they are. But there is actual concrete data that suggests that they're more likely to be breaking the law than as a comparison to the general population. For instance, the biggest nexus in shootings in Seattle last year. So if you look at all the reasons a shooting might occur, gang violence, domestic violence, the biggest nexus was the connection to homelessness, more than gang violence, more than domestic violence. And that did mean, by the way, that homeless people were more likely to be the victim of a shooting or the victim of a homicide, which is another reason not to leave them in the conditions that they're in. So this is a horrible story. It's just the latest example of innocent people in Seattle minding their own business, trying to be good, empathetic human beings and paying a price for it. And we're going to talk later in the show. There's a new mayor in Chicago. New mayor, same as the old mayor. And there's an election in Seattle this year, and I think what's happening in Chicago is really should be a wake-up call for Seattleites when it comes to who they choose this year and how voters go about making decisions for who's going to represent them on the Seattle City Council. So that's just a horrible story. I hope that man gets a full recovery. But again, it's just this example of the depths of what people are dealing with on our streets goes so much further than poverty. All right. Moving on. We added a new sponsor to the show yesterday. I post a long video with Wes Jones on my social media pages if you haven't seen it already. So Wes Jones owns sellwithwes.com, Wes Jones and Associates, a wonderful real estate agent in our area. And he had been for years, and I think he's the longest serving real estate endorser over on Cairo Radio. And so he was endorsed by our friend Dory Monson. And that's what I posted a social media video about, just sort of, you know, cancel culture coming for Dory and his awesome sponsors like Wes Jones sticking up for him. And so we were in contact with Wes Jones about coming on as a sponsor, and we're so happy to have them because I know his moral character, and so I know how he is as a business owner and how he is as a real estate agent, the loyalty that he showed Dory Monson, and so I know that he's just a really good guy, and he's very good at what they do. You know, I had Wes in, and we talked a little bit about their model of truly trying to get you the best possible price for your home, and he also says, although the market has been up and down and just going crazy, he says he does see kind of a window of opportunity right now when it comes to real estate, where you might actually be able to get back to the point where you have competing offers again. For a while, that wasn't the case. So if you want to find out, is now a great time to sell my home? Should I hold off a little longer? Go to sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com. A better way to sell your home. And Wes Jones, I will never sell my home with anyone else because of the loyalty that he showed Dory Monson. All right. I shared a clip on social media that I was like, I got to play that on the show. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. Jon Stewart interrogating Light, a government official. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Okay, so CNN had this, and I'm actually shocked that this aired on CNN, or on C-SPAN, not CNN. It wouldn't have aired on CNN. C-SPAN had this great conversation where Jon Stewart, formerly of The Daily Show, was interviewing Deputy Secretary of Defense Kathleen Hicks. So you might recall that there was this massive audit done by the Defense Department that didn't go well for them, essentially. And Jon Stewart was asking, and he was embarking on that line of questioning about, you know, how can you not pass an audit? And what does this say to people, et cetera, et cetera. And Kathleen Hicks did not like the line of questioning, but it's more than that. I really felt like, and I'm going to play three clips from this. This was a absolute masterclass in interviewing. Absolutely. And you might not like Jon Stewart, that's fine. But I don't think that you, once you watch this, that you can deny that that is how every single journalist should be interviewing an elected official. Because you'll notice Jon Stewart stays very calm. And she immediately, you can tell immediately she's out of her depth. Even though this is supposed to be her area of expertise. She's the Deputy Secretary of Defense. She gets defensive. She starts giggling awkwardly. And then she pulls out what is the tried and true method of politicians, elected leaders, appointed officials who are out of their depth. And that is to try to make you feel like you're dumb. Try to make the interviewer feel like you don't know what you're talking about. So let's pick up this clip. Again, I'm going to play three clips where Jon Stewart has been pressing her on the issue of the audit, and she starts to treat him like he's an idiot.
Do you feel like these are unfair questions of somebody within a department of that size and scope?
I think you have a particular thing you really want to talk about, and you're asking me other questions. But I don't think it's unfair to ask me about the audit. It's absolutely the case that the United States military should be able to pass an audit, and we've got to be on that pathway to get there.
But don't you think that that does speak to the larger point that we're trying to get at, which is good journalism uncovers corruption?
Good journalism does uncover corruption, yeah. But I'm not sure these two things are linked. An audit is not...
Oh, but they are.
Okay, so you need to explain to me, do you understand what an audit does and the degree to which it is linked to the question that you're asking?
I believe so.
Okay, go ahead. Give me your explanation.
I don't mind learning. So what I would suggest is that the audit that they have in the military doesn't really look at... whether or not there's efficacy, it's just whether they got delivered the thing that they ordered. And
That is any audit. That is true.
But generally, those audits aren't $400 billion for Raytheon and $1.7 trillion for a plane that doesn't seem to be doing. Like, there is a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse within a system.
Audits and waste, fraud, and abuse are not the same thing. So let's decompose
then
these pieces.
Please educate me on
sure. What so an audit is exactly what you just described, yes. Which is, do I know what was delivered to which place?
Right.
The ability to pass an audit or the fact that the DoD has not passed an audit is not suggestive of waste, fraud, and abuse. That is completely false right there. So
what is
now is a question of it's suggestive that we don't have an accurate inventory that we can pull up of what we have where. That is not the same as saying we can't do that because waste, fraud, and abuse has occurred.
So in my world,
yeah,
that's waste.
How is that waste?
If I give you $1 billion and you can't tell me what happened to it, that to me is wasteful. That means you are not responsible. But if you can't tell me where it went, then what am I supposed to think?
So a couple things there. Her body language says it all. Her giggling when he's asking, and John Stewart's so composed, and he even says, "Hey, I don't mind learning. If I truly don't know what an audit is, I don't mind learning. That's fine." And then he recites the exact definition of an audit. And she has to acknowledge, like, yeah, that is. However, you still don't understand it, dummy, essentially. And again, for someone like me who's done many, many interviews with powerful people, you know exactly when you kind of have them. Like, that shows me she's out of her depth. She's trying to deflect onto John Stewart. Like, you tell me if you know what an audit is. And I always... My advice to anybody in government would be never sit down for an interview with someone smarter than you, which is the case here because he is obviously much more intelligent than she is. But let's continue on because then he just absolutely, after maintaining his composure, I mean, John Stewart's a pro. He is building this up to bring the hammer down on her, essentially.
I think most people would consider that somewhere in the realm of waste, fraud, or abuse because they would wonder why that money isn't well accounted for. And especially when they see food insecurity on military bases and they see...
You want to talk about that? Because that's a good... We should be talking... I mean, well, I'm trying to understand where you're trying to go other than the dollars, which really bother you.
I think it doesn't really bother me. I think it's all connected.
Okay.
I think
Tell me how you're thinking about that.
Well, when I see a State Department get... a certain amount of money and a military budget be 10 times that, and I see a struggle within government to get people like more basic services, and then that department that got that, I mean, we got out of 20 years of war and the Pentagon got a $50 billion raise. Like, that's shocking to me. Now, I may not understand exactly the ins and outs and the incredible magic of an audit, but I'm a human being who lives on the earth and can't figure out how $850 billion to a department means that the rank and file still have to be on food stamps. Like, to me, that's fucking corruption. I'm sorry. And if that blows your mind, and if you think, like, that's like a crazy agenda for me to have, I really think that that's institutional thinking. And that it's not looking at the day-to-day reality of the people that you call the greatest fighting force in the world.
Masterclass. Excellent. He calls her out for being condescending without being condescending himself. And that is like a true, true art form. And he makes his point. You know, you see how she's trying to deflect about, oh, well, let's talk about, you know, getting more money to the rank and file of the Army. Like, you seem to be very obsessed with this figure. And then he brings it all together by saying, yeah, I am. Because when we talk about a budget that big and the fact that you can't manage it in a way where the rank and file can afford to eat food, then, yeah, I do have an issue with that. And if you think that's weird, you know, I don't really know how to help you. And then I'll play just the ending clip because she realizes, like, she's lost this and she's come across looking very petty and very uninformed. And so she just tries to completely pivot.
I'm not looking to pick a fight with you, but I am surprised that the reaction to these questions are, you don't know what an audit is, bucko. Like, that's just weird to me.
Okay. On food insecurity, major priority
Pivot.
For us. A lot of
Pivot.
Funds are going toward that. The biggest issues we have found...
Yeah, then she just keeps going on from there, like as if it never happened. But I love that. And I think that's such a good example of, is it advocacy journalism? Of course, you know, Jon Stewart certainly has an opinion, a strong opinion on that issue, but he approaches it in a way where he's really continuing his line of questioning. There's a lot of journalists that would back off at that point. There's a lot of journalists who, if met with that level of hostility, or you're being a silly, you're uninformed, you don't know what you're talking about, would back off. But Jon Stewart is smart enough, capable enough, competent enough, knows what he's talking about enough, where he realized, no, I see what she's doing, and I'm going to press forward. And I think if we had even 100 journalists with that level of fortitude in the country, it would be a much different place. And politicians wouldn't think they can get away with the level of gaslighting that they get away with, both at the local level and the national level. But as far as interviews go, that one was truly unbelievable. Okay, methodworks.com. We've been talking about MethodWorks Consulting, which does all things tech for your business, whether you have 5 employees or 50 employees. If you're thinking that you need some help with technology, maybe you need your employees set up with computers, you need to migrate things to the cloud, or you need help keeping your data and your customers' data secure, reach out to MethodWorks. And one of the things that was explained to me by the MethodWorks owner, Mark Harmsworth, who spent a lot of time with Microsoft before building his own business, also served in the Washington State Legislature, is he said there's a lot of small businesses that don't realize one data breach can put you out of business. It can absolutely end your business that you've built. And that's just not worth it. And so one of the things that MethodWorks is doing specifically for subscribers and viewers of the Undivided podcast is they're offering a free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring, which is awesome because he knows that there's a lot of businesses, especially small businesses, and I know because I've been trying to build a small business, who security and trying to protect against fraud and people stealing your data, it's not kind of the first thing that comes to your mind when you're building a small business, but he knows how critical it is. So again, they're offering at MethodWorks 1 month of free security monitoring and a free security review. So check them out, methodworks.com. Again, that's methodworks.com. And make sure to mention that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast with me, Brandi Cruz. I always hate saying my name in third person. Does that count as third person?
Yes. Okay. Me, Brandi. Well, no, you're identified. I don't know.
Okay.
Don't give me a grammar quiz.
All right, let's move outside Washington State for a couple national stories. I have been just railing on, for instance, Democrats who have this intense moral hypocrisy on crime. You know, they want to ban these so-called assault weapons, and they are going to. They're at the cusp of it in Washington because they say they want to save lives and, you know, protect people from gun violence. But at the same time, they're proposing laws that would reduce the penalty for people who actually do use guns to commit crime. And so there's just a lot of moral hypocrisy there. There's a lot of pushing things that will give them a political win, but that I don't think will work. And that, to me, is what it comes down to at the end of the day, is will your ideas work? And are you pushing things that are strictly performative in nature, which I think is a lot of what politics has boiled down to, is very performative. So I will admit, I don't know too much else about the mayor of Baltimore. I don't follow Baltimore politics very well. But he's younger. He's a black man. Nicole, will you look up how old he is? Because he looks super, super young. And they are dealing with some serious issues with violence among youth. And gosh, that's something we can relate to, right? We've got these 14, 15, 16-year-olds out there committing violent acts. There was this big gathering in Baltimore late at night where two young people were shot. Do you have his age?
Yes, he's 39.
39, young guy. And you can kind of tell, which maybe it takes like a young mind to be able to come up with new solutions to these things. But I really like, and I'll play this story from WBAL-TV, that after there was this big melee with all these teens and two kids were shot, and again, it happened middle of the night, he comes forward and he says, okay, we're going to put a curfew in play. Something very old school, you know, a curfew for the kids. And in this WBAL-TV story, he explains why.
This comes as two teens recover from a shooting at the Inner Harbor on Sunday, prompting the mayor to bring back the nighttime curfew for young people.
It is not normal or okay for young people that young to be outside that late at night by themselves, miles and miles and miles away from home.
Under the curfew, children under the age of 14 have to be inside by 9 p.m. Teenagers ages 14 to 16 have to be inside by 10 p.m. on school nights and 11 p.m. on non-school nights. Starting on Memorial Day, the city will once again open Youth Connection Centers and offer young people the help they need if they're at home unsupervised.
For those who are thinking this is solely about snatching young people off the streets and putting them in the room, no, this is about making sure that we know what is going on with those young people.
Love it. Love it. It's so simple. And I know that there's some, you know, the libertarian in me is like, don't grab my kid off the street. But at the same time, like, why is your kid on the street?
Yeah, if you're not going to do the parenting, then I guess they're going to have to.
Within reason. But at the same time, like, there's no good reason for a 14-year-old to be out on the streets of Baltimore at midnight.
Right.
Hanging with their friends. Nothing, what's the phrase?
Right.
Nothing
and
good happens after midnight.
By not doing the parenting, I assume somebody like that is just absolutely checked out, because
right.
It's different than, you know, medical decisions but that you don't believe in, things like that happening
right.
As far as government and parents go, but this is obviously some parent is just turning the other way
right.
Their
they
kids
don't
going out
care.
All night.
It's different than
ridiculous.
Like the government overriding your parenting on something. This is
right.
An absence of parenting.
Right.
But again, like, is this banning assault weapons? No. But it is. Is it defunding the police and investing in other alternatives? No, it's not something grandiose. It's a curfew. When I was a kid, I remember our town, the town closest to us, had a curfew. And what it allows you to do, and you might say, well, kids will just break the curfew. That's fine. But the simple act of being on the streets is something that police can come contact you for then. Mm-hmm. And so that does make a difference. And so that's, you know, I think sometimes, and we see this a lot in Washington State, solutions to things are totally overthought. They try to get these, what is going to get us headlines? What can we use on the campaign trail? All these big, bold ideas. Oh my God, kill me if I see another political ad with the word bold in it. It should be banned. And then you've got this guy in Baltimore who's like, let's just make sure the kids have to be home by 10.
Mm-hmm.
That's very easy. And I kind of love it.
Well, it's going straight to the problem. Instead of,
right.
For instance, guns. There's too many kids with guns. So we'll ban guns. Well, that's not taking care of. Why are kids picking up guns?
Right. It doesn't. It's a solution to the aftermath. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar like in Washington State where Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, wants to go after Kia for the fact that their cars are so
right.
easy to steal. Well, why aren't you doing something about
right.
them stealing the cars in the first place? It's insane to me. So kudos to the mayor of Baltimore. I like that idea. All right. Also outside Washington State, but certainly has a nexus here, Biden has officially ended the COVID emergency. And he actually signed a bill that was crafted by Republicans to be able to send it. I don't know if it was an official bill or how that works, but he... he signed a bill Monday, this according to New York Post, ending the COVID-19 national emergency more than 3 years after it went into effect. And again, it was drafted by Republicans, so that's good that he sees the need to finally end the COVID state of emergency, considering we are very much not in a COVID emergency anymore. And we know how long it took Governor Jay Inslee to relent and to give up his emergency powers way too long. Kind of crazy it's taken this long. But, you know, I continue to be, and Nicole, you put this note in the show sheet, I continue to also be shocked that we still have a vaccine in Washington State.
I want him to explain it. There's no reason other than to show that you're only willing to hire people that are
obedient.
That will do what you say.
Obedient.
Right.
Yeah. And
obedient.
I have had an opportunity to try to have the governor explain it. When I was filling in on Cairo Radio, the governor mm-hmm. came on, which is still bizarre to me. And that's what I told him is I today have no vaccine left in my body. I got the first two doses, never got a booster because I realized the vaccine wasn't what was promised. Okay. And I was still going to be able to give COVID. And what I told the governor is I could apply for a job with the state today, even having no vaccine in my body, and I could get that job, assuming the governor would allow me to have it. But someone who has the same level of protection in their body, which is none, who never got the COVID vaccine, could not. So like someone who got it two and a half years ago, they could get a job with the state. It makes no sense. So the only rationale for that is obedience,
mm-hmm.
because there is no booster mandate with the state. So even if you believe that the COVID vaccine, you know, really truly is effective, I think it's effective in preventing serious illness or death. I don't think it's effective in preventing transmission. But even if you believe that and you were in line with the vaccine mandate, the fact that there is no booster mandate gives it away.
Right.
Like at least I don't want there to be either, but at least he could be morally consistent and like scientifically consistent and say, well, yeah, if we think that employees have to be vaccinated, then we'd have to mandate the booster.
Right.
So without it.
It doesn't make any sense.
Now, I'm not trying to encourage you, Governor, to change your mind on mandating the booster. Please don't take it that way, but it doesn't make any
sense.
Please
don't. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not go there.
Now, really quickly before we get to your comments, Nicole, I'm going to put this in the show because you wanted to talk about it. It has no relevancy to the mission of the show whatsoever.
Well, you snuck lucky in the beginning, so I figured.
I talked about my dog, so you get to talk about the Dalai Lama?
Oh, sorry. I thought we were getting to the text. Never mind. Okay.
No. Okay.
Sneak ahead. Well, that's later.
Nicole wants to talk about the Dalai Lama being a complete perv to this little kid. So we'll just toss it in the show because
it's good
fodder.
I couldn't get it out of my head. It was in my head all night. I don't understand why it's okay. Because I don't think
it's okay. People are kind of freaking out about it.
Yeah, but nothing. They've said, oh, he silly him.
What do you want them to do to the Dalai Lama?
I don't know.
So a little bit of
investigate.
I'm trying not to snort because I've really been trying to be a good girl and not snort. Because I'm trying to come off as classy and elegant. So the Dalai Lama is speaking somewhere, and this kid stands up and he asks if he can give the Dalai Lama a hug. And I've cut that part out of it because it's just kind of long and they're like, and eventually he says, oh yeah, come up. And he gives him a hug, but then he tries to give him more than a hug. You have the video?
Yeah, I have it. Here you go. Whoa, almost have it.
Almost. So he's just talking.
It's my tongue.
Oh my god. So if you're only listening on the podcast, he points to his lips and tries to get the kid to give him a kiss on the lips, and then he sticks out his tongue and he's like, suck my tongue to this little kid,
and the kid pulled away from the kiss but then reluctantly gave him a kiss on the lips.
Yeah, he didn't suck his tongue though.
No, but then he again pushes him to suck his tongue, and the kid is like, no,
and people are laughing. And it's like, what do you suck my tongue?
I've heard that there's a thing that maybe in that culture, there's a thing where you stick your tongue out and it's supposed to be playful or hello, blah, blah, blah. But not the sucking part. So everybody's trying to okay it with tongue as part of their playful culture, but not the suck part.
It's just hard to watch. But are you happy we fit the Dalai Lama in?
Yes, I think it's very hypocritical. I mean, if that was the Pope, that would be the end of that Pope, right?
Did you just make a hypocrisy angle? Because now it fits the show.
That's why I put it in there.
Nicole, I love it. You can find hypocrisy in anything. Okay.
Yes, wrong.
Nicole wanted that yesterday. I didn't give in. I relented today. Okay. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I am committed right now. I'm on my last bender to lose my last 9 pounds of COVID weight. And then I'm going to take all the pictures of fat brand. I shouldn't say fat brandy because I'm going to give people body dysmorphia. I'm going to take all the pictures of me having gained 42 pounds during the pandemic, and I'm going to scrub them from the internet after I finally lose the last of my COVID weight. I will, and right now there's like Matt Gilbert on the stream is saving that photo so he can bring it up every day for the rest of my life. But I've been preaching the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. I've heard from so many of you who have started it, who've lost weight, who are doing it with your significant other. To me, it was a great way to lose weight quickly that you weren't used to carrying on your body anyway. And that was the case for me. You know, I put on 42 pounds during the pandemic. My body didn't want all that weight on me. I just ate too much, I think, and I was stressed and quit my job in TV, so I wasn't looking at myself every single day. But anyway, I was able to lose the vast majority of that 32 pounds in 60 days. And so I remember starting it at the beginning of November, and then by mid-December, Nicole and I went to Vegas for a concert, and I looked like a completely different person. Like, I really was like, oh my God, I feel so much better already. So you get this instant payoff. It's real food, no prepackaged meals. You don't have to go in somewhere and get weighed and shamed while you step on the scale like every month. You can do the whole thing virtually if you want. But give Dr. Ryan Coogan a call, or better yet, just visit him at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com, and sign up for a free 15-minute consultation. So basically, he'll just go over the program with you. You can do it virtually, and you can decide if it's right for you or not. But it has been right for me. I just have 9 more pounds to go, so I'm trying to do that before my bachelorette party.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys are planning my bachelorette party, and so I just want to get back to my pre-COVID weight before my bachelorette party.
Swimsuit.
So we're going to be in San Diego, mm-hmm. and I'm going to have, you know, a swimsuit on.
Yep.
Maybe if you guys are nice, I'll post photos.
Maybe.
See how it just bait.
You're teasing them with swimsuit photos.
Anyway, let's get some questions in from the live stream. Okay, on, Larry with a super comment on YouTube, super chat. Super comment. I sound like an old lady. The absolute willful ignorance, this is regard to the police pursuit fix. The absolute willful ignorance of data and instead trading on emotion is the new Democrat platform. Emotional falsehoods on pursuits, guns, drugs, homelessness. I could not agree more. In fact, I wrote an op-ed about this that on Patreon and Locals that talked about some of the ways Democrats were manipulating people's emotions. You know, they were saying pushback against the bill was just based on emotion and not fact. Or it was based on police scaring people into not supporting the 2021 law. And it's really wrong and it's gaslighting. And it also, I think, serves to just treat your constituents like they're stupid, as if they can't possibly be informed enough on this issue that they can make a determination that it's not a good law. Like, as if anyone who disagrees with something you support must be dumb. That's how I take that. And it's absolutely absurd. So thank you for that comment. Larry, Wes on YouTube. Is that Wes Jones?
I'm not sure.
Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com.
I don't think so.
Fit in sponsorships?
Oh, yeah. Well, then.
He asks, how's your cat doing? You have two.
See, this is where I thought you were going with that.
No, I don't care that you put a cat comment in.
Oh, no. I just wanted to update everybody. My cats are doing well. There's actually two now because I had to get one to keep the other one happy.
And also, she's still single. Shock. I wonder if there's a correlation between those two things.
Hey. I'm not saying there's not. But they're doing well. They're doing very well. Brooks is a beast. I call him Brooks the Beast because he is very beastly. But, you know, I need a little beast in my life.
On Patreon, Chad says, this is feedback on our new formatting, which I'm glad we're reading this because I have something to say about it. He says, it would be nice to be able to download the video version to watch on my flights. I'm downloading the audio version in Amazon Music currently. So, you know, we're a week and a half in now. And some of you on Patreon and Locals have said you really miss there being a native video on those sites as opposed to getting kicked to YouTube. So we're toying with the possibility of going back to that. It wouldn't be live, though. So you could watch it live the way we're doing it now. But we're toying with the idea of then posting the full video to Patreon and Locals that you can watch later. The only issue with that is it will send, then you'll get 3 emails a day if you're a subscriber for the same episode. You'll get the audio version, the live notification, and then you'll get the video version. So let me know if you're okay with that, because I'm open to both. I don't want to spam people's inboxes, though. So that's the only thing holding us back from doing that. Let's see. On Pursuits, on Facebook, Greg says, stolen vehicles are used in other crimes 100% of the time. I bet if the politician had their car, they would want them caught. Exactly. I'm sorry, but maybe, you know, back in the day, or maybe in some like rural area, you might have a kid who's taken a car on a joyride, but that's probably a fraction of 1% of cases. The idea that this is a property crime is insane to me. What do you think they're doing with those stolen vehicles? It's so stupid. On Sarah, Facebook said, thank you for giving Immaculee her voice. Thank you to Immaculee's family for giving her a voice. You know, her parents, her siblings showing up to this public safety rally we had in Olympia, meeting with lawmakers. I can't imagine that's a very easy thing to do, to thrust your family into this just shitstorm of a public debate on safety and pursuits. And they've done that. And I'm so, so grateful they did, because we need to hear those stories. People need to hear from people like Immaculee's mom, Amber, about what she's lost and about the pain that she's endured as a parent. So, you on YouTube, Dan said, glad David Hackney has some common sense, unlike some of his party colleagues. It shouldn't be considered brave to speak up on common sense, yet here we are. Totally agree. I mean, David Hackney's comments are common sense. Like I said, I wish he had been more forceful and vocal earlier on, because I think as a Democrat representing South King County and as a Black man, I think that that would have been significant. And I think it would have been meaningful. And I just wish he had found that voice a little bit sooner. But if David Hackney's staff is watching, we'd still love to have you on the show. I'd love to have you on the podcast to talk about it. We can follow back up and see if now that it's over, that's a possibility. Aaron said on YouTube in regard to John Stewart, that's why a vast majority of elected officials in our state won't do it. Light exposure is bad for fungus. They know it. Oh, light exposure. Exposure to them is the only thing that could bring them down. So you're saying that's why a majority of elected officials in our state won't sit down for interviews like that. And I tend to agree. I always had respect for people who would do an interview with me, especially if they knew that we weren't going to agree on a lot. Like, as much as I don't think Governor Inslee is a good governor, the fact that he came on with me, on Cairo Radio and multiple times when I was at Fox 13, I was sort of like, wow, you're really, really asking for it. No, I thought that was good. And it's, yeah, you don't see enough of it. But I think if every reporter had the capability to question a powerful person like Jon Stewart did in that clip, I think that politicians would be a lot better at their jobs because they would know that they just can't get away with some of the bullshit that they're selling. Okay, we're going to end. Is that all of them, Nicole? Did I miss any that you put in there? I mean, I know there's a bunch, but...
Yeah, there's lots, but...
Yeah.
Yep, that's good.
Okay, all right. And we also do, by the way, on the Sunday, Sunday with Subscribers, our exclusive show for subscribers, we go through and find some comments on Patreon and Locals that we didn't get to during the live show and try to answer some of them there. All right, let's get to our closing segment. We call it Sanity Check. So if you haven't heard by now, Chicago has a new mayor, and his name is Brandon Johnson, and he replaces Lori Lightfoot. And, you know, when Lori Lightfoot didn't, you know, so they had basically, it was almost like a primary type thing, but she didn't move forward. So we knew that Lori Lightfoot wasn't going to win, and then you had these two other people advance, and then they elected a guy named Brandon Johnson. But before Brandon Johnson was elected, after Lori Lightfoot was given the boot, I thought, bravo, Chicago. Like, we are really going to change course here. I mean, Lori Lightfoot, the fact that she was even mayor is insane to me. Some of the things that she would say and her justification and really ignorance at certain points on the violence that was occurring on her streets. You know, she'd speak out about all these national issues with no relevance to Chicago. And, you know, where was it where the LGBTQ nightclub, there was a shooting?
Florida?
No, I want to say it was in the Colorado or someone. No, not that one. Not Pulse.
Oh.
There was a different one. Oh, Denver. One. It was a Denver or somewhere like that. And she's taken to Twitter about the violence. And it's like, you can do that, but also you just blatantly ignore the violence in your own city all the time. So again, it's this moral hypocrisy. So anyway, I'm thinking, wow, Chicago, awesome. Like, good for you for standing up for yourselves, for wanting more of your city. And then Chicagoans? Chicagoites?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. They elected a man named Brandon Johnson, who, I hate to say it, might actually be worse than Lori Lightfoot. Here is Brandon Johnson talking about the Black Lives Matter movement and his anger over politicians minimizing it about a month before he was elected.
The president of the United States, the former president of the United States, I'm sorry, President Barack Obama, took it one step further as well, and basically said that the effort of the defund police movement lost an audience because of that that slogan, I guess is what he's calling it, which I don't look at it as a slogan. It's an actual real political goal. We know the mayor of Chicago here, like, rebuked this call to redirect money to defund this failed, you know, system of incarceration and policing. You know, so whether it's the president of the United States, you know, calling it a catchy hashtag or phrase, Lori Lightfoot, which I think is actually quite dismissive of the young people who are literally putting their lives on the line for a cause that I think, quite frankly, is not just admirable, but is necessary.
Putting their lives on the line for a cause they think is not only admirable, but necessary. Meanwhile, no mention of the literal lives being lost on the streets of Chicago. So this is a guy who supported police defunding, who was in a clip talking about how when he was teaching, he refused to give any student an F and he refused to assign homework. And this is the person that Chicago has chosen instead of Lori Lightfoot. And I got to be honest, it terrifies me. And it reminds me of Seattle voters having this huge opportunity in 2019 to take things in a different direction and reelecting Shama Sawant. And then not only reelecting Shama Sawant, but keeping her when she went through a recall after the Summer of Love, after she allowed riders to take six square blocks of her district and actively endorsed what they were doing, she still kept her job. She still kept her job after a recall effort. And I think it just goes to this, you know, if Seattleites look at Chicago, the fact that things in Chicago are not going to get any better under this man because he supports the same kind of policies that led to Chicago's downfall in the first place. Seattle voters have to have a moment where they realize that if they keep voting for the same people and the same policies and the same ideology, that things are never going to get better. They're never going to get better. And you have to decide what kind of city you want to be. I'm a little terrified that Seattle has already decided and that we might be past that point, because 2019 to me was just this absolute bummer that the business-friendly candidates, by and large, did not win. And so I am very hopeful. There's 7 of 9 Seattle City Council seats that are going to be on the ballot this year. 5 of them have incumbents that aren't even running again. So it's this huge opportunity to really put Seattle on a brand new trajectory. And I hope that for the sake of what I believe is truly one of the most beautiful cities in the world, should be at least, I hope that they can see that if they continue to do what they've always done, it's going to continue to get worse. And we're not talking about some sort of, leftist option and then a Republican option. There aren't Republicans running for Seattle City Council. There's just not. And so you're really talking about different shades of blue. They share your values on basically everything. And to me, you know, going with people who understand the importance of business, who understand that we just cannot coddle criminals, we have to do something with repeat offenders, even if they have a mental illness. I'm very hopeful that Seattle voters will do the opposite of what Chicago has done here and not continue this insane pattern of voting in the same kinds of people who have ruined the city in the first place. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not become a subscriber already, I would love to have your support of the show. It allows us to keep doing this full time. You can do it for as little as $5 a month. Just go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. You can figure out where to watch episodes, where to listen. You can contact us, and you can click the link there to subscribe to support the show on Patreon or Locals. We would really love to have you. And we also do a bonus episode every single Sunday.